Welcome to another episode of the Cambridge Endurance Sports Podcast, the podcast that's been downloaded in at least 50 countries now. Different start to the podcast this week with a Ghostbusters theme tune, not my usual sort of music, but the reason for it will become apparent during the interview. It's a different podcast in many ways. I've got three guests, Ian, Neil and Michael, talking about the Hope Alive Tour. And please stick with it, stick with the interview, keep listening, because I think the real essence of this event, what it means as a running endeavour, but also as a way of bonding with others and doing something really worthwhile, I think the whole spirit of it comes across as the interview develops. Remember, if you like this podcast, this episode, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram. It all helps. And in the meantime, keep on running, cycling, whatever you're doing. Sit back and relax and enjoy my interview about the Hope Alive Tour. Right, well, I'm in a new setting today. I'm in Neil Marsh's gym in Willingham, Highgate Farm, the Over Road in Willingham. I went to the wrong place first, but now I'm in his lovely unit. And I've got three fine young gentlemen in a very cosy room with me. I've got Michael Scott, Neil Marsh himself, and former guest Ian Willie Williamson, who's got a new nickname, which maybe we'll delve into a bit later, Wolverine. I've also got to remember Purple Bins and... Boom. So those are things I've got to go into a bit later on. But we'll start with the sort of more serious side of this. And the reason I've got these guys together is to talk about a great event and quite impressive event, which these guys were involved in, which was called the Hope Alive Tour and involved running all the way from Hull to Cambridge. And there's more on the way, I understand. So, Michael, if you can tell us a bit about the origins of this and who, in fact, you were raising money for.
Yeah, so... back in 2016, I went out to Sierra Leone after Ebola broke out the disease, and a charity built four bungalows for children who lost their parents through Ebola. I came back and thought, let's do something different. I've always done running. I've always wanted to do something really, really big. I remember when I was living in Australia back in 89, one of the challenges was to maybe run from Sydney to Melbourne, doing some really crazy run. So I thought, what can I do that's different? Do something different and it captures people's imagination. So we talked about running across Sierra Leone. We talked about running around the circumference of Sierra Leone, but wow, running out in Africa is too many risks at night. So we came up with the idea of doing some run in the UK, and we linked this to Wilberforce.
You thought Hull was safer than Africa?
Well, good question, actually. Yes, I've never been to Hull before, so I don't know. So we came up with this route from Hull to Cambridge to Liverpool to London, and we followed that route because Wilberforce was born in Hull, studied St John's College in Cambridge, and I was working on a big scheme in Toxteth linked to the slave trade, and then to central London to the embassy. So that was the kind of original route.
Yeah.
It was about 400 miles. We had a team of 12 runners, a support crew, two camper vans, a car and a bicycle. It's a lot of fun, I tell you. It took 9 months to set up. Yeah. So we started off by two other guys helped me. Put it on a route on a spreadsheet, because they were both accountants, so they love spreadsheets. We spent weekends away just driving the route initially, and taking pictures and all that kind of stuff. Thankfully, I was at a New Year's Eve party, and I found a guy who was into GPX systems and all that kind of stuff, so he put it onto an app, which was, without that, you could never do it, because at night, you wouldn't have a clue where you are, because most of the roads we were on were really minor roads,
So explain the format then of how the race, about how long each person ran, whether it's continuous, how did it work? I hear there were like groups of four, is that right?
Initially, we set off actually on the first day, and Neil Marshall remembers this as well. We really wasn't sure how we were going to run this, you know, whether we're going to split into teams or run in an hour or 2 hours or half an hour or 4 miles or whatever. So the first couple of hours was actually pretty crazy and wacky. We got into ultimately a routine, and we split into two teams, and we were running for 40 miles as a team. But each team could take longer than the other one. Now, since then, we've done it twice before, and we've got a good format that actually works, where we split into two teams, and basically each runner runs for half an hour, so they run for 4 hour slots. So it's manageable, predictable, controllable, and all that kind of stuff.
And that's what you did at this most recent event.
Yeah, it's great, yeah. So, but the first time we did it, we actually went out to Africa as well. So we ran from Freetown to a place called Waterloo, which is 26 miles from Freetown. And we arrived in Freetown at 6 in the morning, and we had a police and military escort all the way to Waterloo, and it was hot. It was unbelievably hot. I don't know if anyone has been to Africa, but the streets in Africa are always full of people, which is a total contrast from the UK, because the minor roads we were on are completely deserted, even during the day. So the contrast between the UK bit and the bit in Africa was completely unbelievable. I mean, there's a whole film on that, YouTube.
Right, we'll direct people to that in the show notes. So that's brilliant. Yeah.
But actually, and Neil was echoed on this as well, it wasn't really about running. It was about the people, the relationships, and the fun you had. The running bit was kind of easy. Mm. The hardest bit was the lack of sleep, actually.
Yeah.
So 3.5-4 days with maybe 5 or 6 hours sleep.
Really?
That's a challenge in itself.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, Neil, going on to Neil Marsh here. First of all, to say he's got his own podcast called The Ultra Running Podcast.
Yeah, so the Ultra Running Podcast, I'm the host of that. I started that because I'm an ultra running fan as much as I am a kind of participant in the sport previously, before sort of the pandemic and before my major injury. But I'm a big fan of ultra running, so I thought, why not talk about it? Because I like talking, I like running, and they both go together. So
they do an ultra run. We'll go on to Ian in a minute. I don't think he does much talking on his 1500s, but
So I was with Michael, managed to rope me in.
So this is right from the start.
Right from the start, yeah. So 2017, I was in as a participant. 2019 was the second tour that we did with a slightly new route, and I was brought in as a participant, but someone that had previously been there and kind of helped along the way with one of the sub teams. And then most recently, 2022, I was there as one of the sub team leaders. So we had Michael and Caitlin in one car, and then myself and Libby in a second car, and we created two teams.
So it was one car against the other?
No. It was a relay between the two teams. So you did, like Michael said, you did half an hour stints.
Yeah.
Twice over four people.
So I'm just trying to picture it. So everyone's in a van, are they? Or in the cars? Or
everyone's in like a big people carrier.
Right, both teams.
That's the team that's on. The team that's off is in the camper van. Resting and recovering. So you've got camper van.
Makes sense.
You know, overnight that works. There's a bit more of a kind of sleeping arrangement, and we get into the beds and whatever else.
Yeah.
In the daytime, it's just kind of sitting around the table, eating your food, recovering, feet up, ice packs if you need them, whatever. And then the team that are in the actual people carrier, they're out there, and you've got the two support drivers, so a navigator and a driver, literally following the runner. Three runners in the van, and one out running in front of the vehicle.
Got it.
Unless, unfortunately, a runner drops out the day before the event. And then there was a bit of logistics that I had to change around in terms of, I just thought about the ability of the runners, what I knew, limited knowledge, but what I knew about the runners that we had, and thought, right, okay, let's try and change this round. And what actually turned out was, is we had seven very strong runners, and that massively affected...
And Ian.
Seven strong runners, and Ian, and... That affected the outcome, affected the outcome and how it ran.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. The first time we did it, we had 96 handovers, right? Because we worked all out on a spreadsheet, and we thought each handover would take maybe 15 seconds. Actually, some of them took a quarter of an hour at night. So you multiply that by 96, so we lost about 7 hours. So to gauge how quick you're going to run is quite difficult, because everyone runs at different paces, you know. Of course. But we had an end destination the first time we did it. We had to be in London at the High Commissioner's office 4:30 on a Tuesday.
Right.
So we did get
the pressure
there.
Was on.
Yeah.
So you've done it both as a participant and as an organiser.
Yeah.
Let's talk about as an organiser first, then, or team leader. What were the challenges then? Did you find it just as fulfilling as doing the running, or was it a very different experience?
In a weird way, it was almost more fulfilling as an organiser, because you got to see, I guess, sides of it that you didn't see because you were just worrying about when your next run was. And I'm sure Ian will elaborate on that in a minute. But, you know, when you're out there running, you're kind of like worried about your recovery, get set, new clothes, get your head down if you can, and then you're back out and you've eaten what you need to eat. Whereas when you're an organiser, you are literally thinking about everything that's going on. Mm. So you need your next runner to be ready. You need to know where we're roughly going to meet the other team, if we're going to meet up in 4 hours. stupid things happen, like you get a puncture on the support vehicle during the actual event. And you realise in that moment, you're the one that's meant to be responsible.
Mm.
You know, we got a puncture and that was something that was just out of the blue that you wouldn't expect. But then you realise you're with a bunch of people that have got real lives as well and experience of things and all clumped together as one big team. And you find yourself in Waitrose having a cafe. And
I'd just like to interrupt Neil there slightly. I think that puncture moment was potentially the... I think that's when it was the start of the bromance, I think, between myself and Neil. I could see that Neil was, you know, I think he was quite stressed out about the puncture, and I felt that he needed, you know, a bit of a hug, I think. And from that moment forward, you know, we didn't look back. But
I mean, I want to get into that later, actually, about like the bonds that these sort of events create, and you know, how it is more of an experience which goes well beyond running. Yeah, but obviously you are a runner primarily, and you've been a former guest. We know, you know, you're a very fast runner, even though you're getting old now. And not as old as me, but you're getting
one day.
Yeah. So what was I've been? Obviously, you know these guys. Oh, you knew. Did you know both these guys before?
No. Well, obviously Mike. Like I've known Mike for a long time. You know, he's I think from Hunts AC when I used to go down and train with Neil Spate was originally, but also from the Chariots of Fire. Mike has tried to bribe me many times to...
Ask you nicely, that's what I did.
He said he would pay me to run badly last year at the Chariots of Fire, so they stood a chance of winning. Of course, I said no.
For those who are, I don't realise, Ian and I have both been in the Julio team, and we've been, I say rivals, but we beat them every time. I mean,
you wait till this year.
Whatever.
But anyway, I want to get into what made you join up this time. And
So obviously I'd not met Neil prior to the event. I think I knew of Neil. I think, you know, I think Mike, you mentioned
Crime Watch.
Yeah, I think.
There you go, Ian. Speechless. That's a first, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, I think it was to do with, you know, I'd spoken to Mike. He was trying to get me involved in it. He said, you know, I think it's something that you'd like. And I was sort of like, oh, I don't know, I can't afford to take time off work, and I've got this and I've got that. I'm a bit busy. But then sort of,
I must admit, that's where my consideration of the event stopped. But you did the right thing.
And you know, I think the more that Mike explained to me what it was about, you know, I'm always interested in a bit of a challenge, you know, and I think when the opportunity is given to me, I may be like thinking, oh, I'm not going to do it, but deep down I'm probably going to do it, you know. I'm just kind of thinking it through, but I think, you know, ultimately I like a challenge. I like to do something, especially if it involves running, and then that was, you know,
obviously it's a different type of challenge to what you normally do in a race. So what were you seeing as being the main challenge? Was it things like the lack of sleep?
I thought it was actually going to be quite easy in the beginning. I thought, oh, you know, well, Mike sold it to me like you'd run for a bit and then you get 7 hours off. So I thought, oh, you're great, that's easy. You know, turns out you got probably 2 or 3, 4 hours sleep max if you were lucky. But you know, I think for me, when I was obviously like an athlete, the number one thing for me would be sleep. Right. You know, if you don't sleep, you don't recover, you can't get ready for the next day. So I struggled with that part of it. I think, you know, like the running for me wasn't too tough. I think, you know, in the beginning I went off a bit hard on the first day.
How many miles did you run in total, do you know, over the days? How many days in total?
So there was four days.
Three and a half.
Well, over that week I ran about 85 miles, but right. I don't know, but that, and I had only run a couple of days before, so sure. it was probably about 70 miles. Right. You know, it was
a fair whack.
Yeah, you know, and considering I only do really about 45 miles a week on average in like a training week, so, but it was, the sleep was like the kind of main thing. But I think after the first or second night, you just kind of, you were sort of on overdrive, you know, as soon as you got back into the van, you were switched on, you were awake. And you just kind of, once you got a bit of a taste for it, you just learned to live with it. You know what I mean? You just got used to it. Your body adapted. And I honestly reckon I could have done another couple of days.
Really?
I was actually okay, because you just get into like a routine. You just get used to it. You know, and I think in the first day, I was like, God, this is going to be really quite terrible. I do value sleep highly.
Yeah.
And I ended up, poor Molly, I ended up sleeping with her boyfriend for... for most of the trip, which I think she was a little bit upset about. Even when they had the chance to actually sleep together, George was like, "Oh, I think I quite like sleeping with Ian, so you can sleep on the spare bed and me and Ian will keep sleeping in the kind of double bunk."
A moment, because you've mentioned two names there. Yeah. Maybe Mike and Neil, you can tell us about the people who were there. Just give them a quick name call.
George Kohler, was at a youth group. I've known George since he's a baby. So yeah. He's at school with my son. So he's a doctor now.
Right.
So he came along, and his Molly, his girlfriend's a dentist, and she's a good runner, actually.
Yeah.
I had to meet her runner. Yeah. George didn't run much, but Molly did.
He ran quite a bit, though. A bit, yeah.
Do you want to go, if you go for your team, and then I'll go for mine.
Good
and
idea.
Then, I had Diane in my team, and Joe. I didn't know... Who? Either of those. And they were both very good runners, actually.
So did the whole of your, starting with Mike's team here, did all of your team go through the whole 3.5 days
regular turn? Yeah, and there was John and Leslie I was at university with. So we had four all middle-aged, I would say, a little bit more. So the key is, actually, you don't have to be an Olympian to do this.
Yeah, this is what I want to get across, I think.
Anyone
could do it.
Anyone was running.
It's quite hard. When I talk to Ian about it, it's quite hard to get it through to him, actually, what the event's all about. Until you do it, you don't really understand what you're letting yourself into. But you don't have to be an Olympian.
No, so Ian's trotting along at 4 minutes a K or whatever. What was the slowest pace that people were doing?
Well, when the Marshmallow Man out of Ghostbusters turned up, it was... probably a 12-minute mile, to be honest. It was slow.
Right, can you explain that?
So, to get us through the night, our sub-team... I'll go through our sub-team first, actually. So,
don't forget the marshmallow.
Our sub-team were very interesting in terms of... We had Kath, who was from Operation Orphan.
Right.
So it was myself and Libby as the support crew. And then Kath was running, and she worked with Operation Orphan... I believe she was their first member of staff that they ever actually had. So she knew the history of what we were doing, and she actually came along for the second part, or the last 24 hours in 2019, to take over part of the driving. So she had a rough idea, and, you know, she had been on this amazing weight loss journey.
Yeah, she was, yeah.
It was amazing. Leading up to it, when it was brilliant. Like, what she did, she lost... I've forgotten how much it was. It was...
She showed us the pictures, and I was shocked, and... I mean, I'll let Neil speak more about this, but I thought she was a real inspiration, a real battler. You could see that a lot of the running for her was quite tough, but she just was always the first to put a hand up, I'll go out and I'll run again.
So Kath had a bit of experience about the tour itself, and as it went, turned out that she was a very competent runner, you know, good ability in terms of endurance. She could go over and over again. Like Ian said, she was always willing and wanted to be out there kind of first, almost not in a kind of in charge way, just wants to like lead by example. And she was brilliant. And then we had what you would in this day and age class as two elite athletes, in Molly and Ian. So Molly had represented Wales, was it?
England.
She was a great Britain. She was Great Britain.
We have a surname,
junior.
Molly.
Is it
Molly Long?
Yeah.
Molly Long,
right. Cool. She was a GB junior. Yeah. I'm sure she was.
She picked up injuries.
Yeah.
So, and then like Ian's experience, which I'm sure you heard on his episode of the podcast, that I think with those two, they were very sort of aware of what they've done in the past and that discipline. And you could see it in the prep, although it was not, I wouldn't have said it was as serious as you would have done.
No.
But there was the prep
that
you perhaps didn't see in the previous years.
Mm.
And actually, it normally resulted with all three of those runners, with the way they approached it, in what I would call a very good distance covered in a short 30-minute period. You know, it was almost like you were performing over and over and over to the levels that we hadn't seen previously on the tour. Like Michael said, it's not about running, but
it's
actually
not a race,
when the runners are a certain level, what you realise is you get to Nottingham with 5 hours to spare, whereas previously you've had to drive the last 5 or 6 miles just to make sure you're there in time for the park run. And that's the kind of difference that there was. And it was probably that discipline. I mean, I'm sure Ian can elaborate.
Did you do that this year, this time with the park run?
Yeah, we did the park run, which is great, actually. It kind of breaks it up.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Have we got anyone more from your team?
So we had to form a the teams weren't actually on paper how they ended up.
Right.
Because there should have been another participant, but he dropped out due to a back injury just a couple of nights before. So it meant that we had only really three runners. But then we had George, who was there as medical support. He would jump in with us. And to be honest, him and I didn't really do too many miles, but we tried to go out and do the odd half hour to just give that little bit of extra rest to the three main runners. And we probably, between us, made up half a person's worth of running throughout the whole tour. But it was interesting because we made the joke, the marshmallow man. So our way of coping with the long nights, which once you've started the 4 hour rota, you realise where you're going to end up. So you know this a couple of days in advance for that last night, and you know it for the night before that we were going to be on in the middle of the night, midnight. And one way when we were coming through Nottingham or towards Nottingham, we were basically creating songs for people or putting a song on to run. And we'd done it all the way through and all the runners had been out there and like the banter was flying out the windows. And then I said, right, guys, I'm going to get out and give you half an hour off. I'm going to get some running in, you know, burn a few calories and get some fresh air. And I totally forgot what we'd been doing for the previous 3 hours of playing these songs for each person. I think Cass was the apprentice, wasn't it? And then I get out and first of all, I'd remembered from 2019 that roughly in the area we were in, there was a massive hill coming up. I thought, I'm sure it's not yet. And it was the biggest incline on the whole whole tour. And I've managed to somehow get out the vehicle, go around the corner, and there it is. And then due to the shadow, I mean, you know, in terms of where I'm at in my own journey at the minute, I'm holding a little bit of extra weight anyway. But in terms of the shadow from the moon,
it projected
it did, didn't it?
Onto this tree, and Neil looked like sort of the Stay Puft marshmallow man. You know, and I wanted to just pre-talk. I kind of thought, you know, I didn't want to come across as being sort of like mean or hurtful, you know, because, you know, sometimes, you know, you can say something. I think, you know, obviously Neil's obviously trying to get back into his running and stuff. And I thought, you know, I didn't want to be mean to him, but it did. It was literally when like I got out as well, it looked like because of the kind of support wheel projected Neil onto this tree, and in the way he was sort of running, it looked like literally the spitting image of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, and I literally was in tears. And then we stuck the Ghostbusters on, and then basically running along. I mean, I don't think I've laughed so hard. I mean, there's all these stories on Instagram, and you can see this.
Right, yeah, we'll try and refer people to that as well. So this, I think, is an important point, isn't it? That when people are together and tired and going through these things, you get humour, don't you?
Yeah.
And you get to a point where you can take the mickey out of people and not worry about it, can't you? And I'm just interested if everybody bought into that or whether...
So in our sub-team...
Yeah.
The filter got less and less, didn't it?
Yeah.
The filter just got less.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I actually really probably, other than Libby, only knew Kath from the previous tour and the fact that she'd been part of Operation Orphan. So I talked to Kath a lot in terms of professional, you know, kind of like that 2019 tour, a couple of times in 2017 when we were at the headquarters of Operation Orphan. But really, other than Libby, she was the one that I did know. I remember being in the gym at Impington when I worked there at the sports centre, and George coming in as a young kid in junior gym that we had back then. So we ended up calling him, because he was the guy doing the music. He ended up with the road name, DJ Junior Gym. And we're sort of shouting that out the window at him, and people just looking at you going, what are you doing? But the whole group found that hilarious, but unless you were there, you wouldn't understand
it. I think that the level of banter was right. I don't think it ever overstepped the kind of mark. I think we all had a pretty good understanding, and you know, it was, you know,
Mike, you can give your perspective. Yeah. It didn't become too sort of male.
No, not at all. I mean, I wasn't in their vehicle suppressing. So but I do say, at the beginning of the tour to everyone, I said, look, during this next 3.5 days, you'll go through every motion that you can go through in life, because you'll get tired, you'll get hungry, you'll get cold, you'll get wet, you'll get weary. just bear in mind, when you get weary and tired and wet, there's other people around you, so be considerate and encourage each other. And I can say, over all the tours we've done, there's Neil echo this because he's been with me, there's never been an issue. No. And it's interesting, because when people get tired, we change, don't we? It's great. And that's the, I say the word, the magic of the tour, is you get a bunch of people you don't really know very well. 3.5 days later, you know them so well because you've slept and ran and laughed and cried and all that. And you just become a family. Yeah. So from a team
building perspective... Probably a lot more so than if you're just in a running club and running once a week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely, yeah. So for a team building exercise, it's fantastic, you know.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, whether you had a corporate event or just a bunch of random people, to bring them together and make them work together and stay together... complete together, finish together, it's great. And that's why
I think we were very lucky in the two teams that we had, that they both just worked superbly, you know, like really well. You know, as I say, I didn't know any of them, you know, on my team, you know, and at the end of it, you know, like I just felt, you know, like a bond, like you said, that you wouldn't kind of get with any other running thing. You know, like you supported one another, you know, you looked out for one another, you know, you try and help out, you had laughs with them when someone was down, you'd put your arm around them, that sort of thing, you know. Yeah, so
and some are quiet than others. They're not all extroverts that do it.
No, of course not.
So it's a great mixture of ages, male, female, abilities. It's great.
Yeah. I think that there's a couple of things to say on that, actually, is that I totally agree. It's like the two teams couldn't have worked any better, but we would also echo that from 2019 and 17. Now, the tour is never about an individual, it's about the whole team and a relay. And it's really important, we make that point at the beginning, that this isn't about individuals at all. But obviously, like, you know, like Michael said, it's not full of extroverts. You know, there's some people that are real introverts there, but and obviously those bigger personalities are going to come out. But what has commonly happened over all three tours, and particularly in our vehicle, and I'm sure, you know, is that those introverts come out and they grow with the team and they just become like a really important part of it. And actually, without them being in that puzzle, the puzzle wouldn't be complete anymore.
Sure.
And it is, it's like a family and like a, it's like that brotherhood kind of thing that you just get. And, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, what ability you are, what level you run at, whatever. It's the same for every person. They feel like they're part of a team. And, you know, even the divide in the teams. I mean, the park run at Nottingham, so it's Beeston Park Run. It's just round the corner from the headquarters of Operation Orphan. And you've been 2 days solid from when we were in the hotel and the pre-talk at the Wise Institute, you know, Wilberforce Institute, since you were really with the other team properly. But you wouldn't have known that at the park run. It was, you know, it was a scenario where we... we're with the other team and mixing in and,
lovely.
So the great thing about it, Ben, is that we're doing all this running and having a laugh and we're raising money for children. So we raised over 40,000 so far on the tours and every penny of that goes to Operation Orphan. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't go to support children. So it doesn't support people's wages or anything like that. So,
which is different to some things, isn't it? Yeah, definitely. We might as well talk about... Well, now let's stick with this current tour for the moment. I want to hear some more, the highlight and the funniest thing.
So one of my funniest things, Ian probably doesn't know about, he's seen the video now, but George did a wonderful David Attenborough impression and he could speak it really well. And it was a really hot summer's evening and, well, spring evening, I guess, but it was really hot. And Ian was out running and he decided to take his top off. We're on the back end of nowhere, this really quiet road. And he was running up the hill and George just broke in to this David Attenborough talk as if he was an animal, but as a human.
Yeah.
And it was just, again, you got to see the video and you got to be there. But in a moment where we know we're not long started and we've got 4 hours and you just need that kind of something to get you into it, the whole team in the car just settled down straight away because George has just come out with this great little speech as if we were watching BBC One. And Ian's got no idea about it.
Yeah,
of course, we video it and then show him when he comes in and that lifts his spirits. And, you know, it's all quite fun, really. But it does, you know, we wouldn't want to put anyone off. But when you're out there running, you do wonder what's going on.
Yeah, and, and it keeps you going.
Because you can't wait to get back in
and see what's to hear filled. The story.
Yeah, that's good, actually. I didn't think of that.
So, yeah, that was quite funny. One of the... I don't know if you want to talk about some of the other highlights in terms of the actual whole group.
Let's do one each, yeah?
Yeah. Do you want to do...
No, go on.
You go for that. So,
they're all so polite.
I want to hear...
The ability to follow instructions when you're tired seems to everyone's inhibitions just go. So we get offered a shower at Beeston, so Nottingham.
Because you get to know each other and you get to smell each other.
So we get this shower and...
I think I know what he's going to say.
For some reason, Michael couldn't follow basic instructions to find the door straight opposite the entrance. He went into this football changing room with John. And they'd had a shower before I found the actual shower we were meant to be in. And just went back to reception and said, oh, I'm sorry, but they're not there. It'd be nice to all be in the same place. They go, oh, we're going to have to go and find them because there were, you know, other things were on.
Yeah.
And John and Michael had managed to half have a shower.
There's no water.
There was no water running. So they had to then come upstairs to the right change room. And then to say we were on a tour where you travel light... I think Ian had about 7 bottles of product with him.
Oh, no, it's not one of these moisturisers.
And it was, and they were all there in the shower. And I just looked at my...
They're all lined up.
You know, I looked at my cheap £1, you know, Lynx bottle from Poundland.
He's got a bit more hair than you, Neil. That's probably it, isn't it?
On his head. So, you know, I did use a bit of conditioner on my chest, actually. But,
too much detail, isn't it?
I think, you know, he was...
It's what the public want to know.
And it was just... It just made a... And then all the men were in change room. I'm sure the girls have got their own stories. But, you know, and it just...
Not about hairy chest, though.
No, hopefully not. Yeah. But it just made a fun out of a situation that really... Should just be a shower.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, it wasn't.
Can become funny in the right circumstances. But then, while we're on the funny thing, can we just clear up the orange bin?
No, purple bin.
Purple bin, sorry, purple.
Purple bin.
And because you are in purple, this is your colour. I'm guessing this is connected.
So I'll quickly talk about that. So, yeah, at the very end of the tour... I think we'd pulled into, where were we? We were in Histon?
Oakington.
This car park by, I don't know, like a
pavilion. At the wreck, yeah.
Which is just near Cambridge for those listening, yep.
Yeah, and I wasn't really sort of paying much attention. And sort of Neil had got out, you know, and then he'd gone and stood next to this wheelie bin. And it was, no word of a lie, it was exactly the same colour as Neil's top. It was purple. So literally I was just like, God, those two look like a pair of brothers, you know. And it was just like, you know, and then the others were like chipping in. And obviously Neil's catchphrase is...
Hey, Neil. Ian, both full of rubbish as well, aren't they?
Well, that's terrible. So that's what I'm getting to. So Neil's catchphrase is, you know, Neil Marsh, boom. You know, or that it was for me anyway, for Neil. But then it sort of turned into like Neil Marsh bin and all this sort of stuff. And again, the listeners might not think, oh, that's not that funny. But no. If you were there, there was people. Julio was there. I mean, Julio doesn't laugh that often. He's quite a serious character. He was nearly in tears.
Yeah,
you know, Neil and
this
bin
it, yeah.
are standing, you know, next to each other. And, you know, when do you ever see a purple wheelie bin? I've never seen a purple. When you get like a blue one or a green one.
Maybe our Royston listeners will know different.
Well,
but yeah,
I certainly haven't. You know, you know, maybe in the Trumpington area. It's,
it's but brilliant, yeah.
You've got all this banter, Ben, but there's a very serious note to the whole talk, because it's all about against modern slavery. So we start at Hull, University of Wise Institute. So Professor John Oldfield, who was really supportive of the tour when he was heading up Wise, he was very instrumental in the 2015 Modern Slavery Act.
Right.
So he's a global expert, and the guy who's taken over, Trevor, is likewise a global expert. So at the start of the tour, which sets it in context, he gives a brief overview of what the Institute still does. So there's a very serious side, and there'll be a lot of laughter here, but it's a very serious side to this, because I've been out to places in Africa and other parts of the world where I've seen the true impact of slavery. Ukraine is a good example at the moment. We've got teams in Moldova, and I was in Romania a few weeks ago. I can see the impact of those situations where children, boys and girls, can be basically kidnapped and abused, all that kind of stuff. So there's a serious side to it, and that's definitely, why we do it. But I always think fundraising can be fun, and that's why I do this.
It's in the name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think just on that serious note, 2019 was the first year that we went to the Wise Institute before. It's, as we arrive in Hull, before we go to the hotel, they put on a buffet for us, and it was great in 2019. Michael did actually ask me in the planning of 2022, do we need to do that? And my response was, yeah, because it gives everyone some sort of perspective as to why they're there and why we're going to do it. And I don't know what you think, Ian, but...
Yeah, I agree. Because before we did the talk, I didn't know exactly, you know, I had a rough idea, but I needed to know why we were doing it, why we were there, who we were doing it for, why we were going from Hull to Cambridge, you know. So, I think that was very important. And it did put it into position. I mean, I know that we gooned around a lot, you know, on the tour, but scratch below that, it was for it was for like a very serious cause.
And that's a motivation
cause,
as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think for this sort of thing, like, you know, you are tired and you need something to keep you going. And I think certainly in our sort of crew, it was having all that fun. It was needed to get you through the night. There was times when you just didn't want to run. There was times when I didn't want to run. I was tired, you know. It's a bit of both. I think you have to find that kind of level.
Now, what was great, Ben, just before COVID, we were due to do the tour and go to Moldova and run. And maybe Neil can explain the impact when you come from the UK, and we went to Sierra Leone in 2017, to go from Britain to somewhere completely different and actually meet the orphans and vulnerable children you're supporting.
I can imagine that's the culmination of it.
I mean, when we arrived at Heaven Homes in Waterloo, Neil, where did you think? I think,
so 2017, we've done 4 days, and it was a slightly different route to the one that we did this year. We've ended up in London, everyone's celebrating like it's over, cuddles at the embassy, then there'd been an arranged bar just round the corner from one of the near the sponsor's office, buffet, couple of beers, you know, families all travelled down. It was amazing. And then you wake up next morning and you realise you're having a team breakfast. And then all of a sudden you're sitting there, and Jess at the time, who was what Caitlin does now at Operation Orphan, which is like the
operations manager,
you're sitting there you've had breakfast with some of the group. You're then sitting in a pre-meeting and Jess starts talking to you and making sure that you've written down your safety answer. If you're taken hostage,
right,
and kidnapped, and have you written down the answer, because the negotiator will ask those taking you and that have kidnapped you, what they'll ask this question to know that you are alive, because you'll give them the answer. Right. And I was sitting there, and all of a sudden it's just like, bang, this is now not what we've just done for the last 4 days. This is somewhere else. So that was before we even got there. Yeah. Then you go to Morocco, change over Morocco, fly into Sierra Leone, and you get out, and I just remember getting out and just hearing all the stories about mosquitoes, and I've never been to Africa, I didn't really know what the drill was, and I just got the insect repellent and just covered myself because I just was so scared of getting bitten by something that was really malicious. And then you get on the bus that was going to take us, it was a mile, wasn't it? It's like a mile from the airport to where the boat was, because there was a massive river that we needed to cross. And the potholes, it was like a roller coaster. It was unbelievable. And this is before we'd done any running. And then all of a sudden you get out, and just time, you're there almost in the middle of the night. And then we're starting at 6 a.m. running, and the sun's rising over the river.
Beautiful, wasn't it?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. You know, all the shanty town, and you know exactly what you would see on the telly in one of those aid adverts almost. And you would see that, and you saw it for real. And then it starts to hit home that, oh, we're not at home anymore. This isn't like the UK. Mm. And I think, as Michael said earlier, the streets, even very early in the morning, were just packed. Mm. There were people everywhere. And once we got out the sort of the main sort of city centre that we were in, we started running, and it was 38 degrees. Humidity was something ridiculous when it was through the roof. And of course, Michael, as Ian will back up, missed out a part in the selling of the tour that there was something like 5,000 elevation feet of elevation in the first 10K of this 26 miles.
But that wasn't mentioned.
It wasn't mentioned at all.
That's detail here. Yeah, come on. You got to read the small print.
A mere trifling detail.
So we run this marathon, and for some reason, including non-runners from the tour that had just started running for the tour, everyone, minus a couple of us, ran together, one big team.
Yeah.
You know, the whole drill that we just explained, two separate teams in the UK, everyone came together, ran. We had some of the young athletes from Sierra Leone were brought to us and came and ran with us.
Lovely.
And we ran all the way to Evan Holmes. So the orphanage that Michael and the guys built with the four houses, and was the school part of the project as well.
Yeah.
But obviously the whole local area. And we arrived and just got absolutely swarmed with the kids from the orphanage. They were just so pleased to see us. And you just thought, in that moment, you just thought, wow, this is what we've been doing. And this is why normally it's not tangible and you can't touch what you've what you've been raising money for, you know, whether you run just sending a
check off or bank transfer at the end of the day. It's very different to that, isn't
it? Yeah, and you got there and straight away, every person had a kid on each hand, holding hands, you know, and it was something we were warned about, and I thought, oh no, this won't come to true.
Yeah.
But we were warned that they'll want to rub your arms because they've never seen hair on a man's arm or whatever.
Yeah.
And they did, and they were just doing this, and they're just really like looking after you, welcoming you to what they were doing. And he thought, this is unbelievable. And one thing that we were kind of told is that we could help, and we could, you know, teach them how to play Andy's guitar. We could teach them, like, I did a bit of fitness with them. And we could do that. But they had roles within their society and their kind of way of life that we were told not to interfere with.
Sure.
That. You know, they still, there's a couple of, like, senior kids that helped collect the water for the house that we were staying in. So, you know, big buckets on their head, carrying the water up so that we could have a shower, which almost made you feel really bad.
Mm.
And almost with that whole kind of slavery kind of approach to it. But we were told that this is their culture. This is what they're, you know, this is how they would live. They go and collect the water from the well. And and it was really real, wasn't it? It was really, obviously Michael had been before. So
it's about helping them, isn't it? Not telling them how to live.
Yeah. And it was really surreal. But completely changed my life forever.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Which is why I'm here over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Because what Brad and the guys are doing and Michael with Operation Orphan is really important. And without it, all those kids that I met who, you know, some of them had to sit with dead parents with the Ebola breakout. They had to sit in a room in quarantine with them in their house until it was safe for them to be removed. They were given food in over the fence and stuff like that. So, you know, to meet them and to say that they wouldn't have that without this kind of fundraising is really important for people to understand. And, you know, whether it be the Marshmallow Man in the middle of Nottinghamshire and it's a good joke, that's great because that gets you through it. But the real reason you're doing it for is just really important to, nail home to people that this is real. And most people won't get to see that.
No, I think anyone listening to this will have got from what you just said there and what you've all said how that is the real driver behind this and how valuable a thing it is, and but also the fun and the bonding and everything else. And the good news is there's going to be more. So Mike, if you could tell us about future events, and are you looking for people to take part in this?
Yeah, so we're doing the tour in October the 5th this year, and it lasts, so we drive up to Hull on the Wednesday, set off Thursday morning, get back into Cambridge Sunday morning. I'm also organising a run up in Scotland, it'll be spring next year, which will run from, if you know your geography, from, if you think of Dumbarton, run out west through the Highlands, get the ferry from Dunoon to Greenock, run down to Troon, do the park run there, then run up to Glasgow to Edinburgh. That's 225 miles, that's 2 days. But the biggest project I'm working on is in 2024, it's the Olympics in Paris.
Yeah.
So I'm working with the Eric Little Foundation. So I'm going to organise a relay from Eltham College, which is in Surrey, about 20 miles south of the Thames. We're going to run from there to Edinburgh. So we're doing a tester next year in the spring. And we're going to be organising a concert as well in Edinburgh, hopefully with the Royal National Scottish Orchestra, and possibly a film. So we're celebrating the centenary of Eric Liddell's win in Paris in 1924.
Fantastic.
Chariots of Fire, which is where it all started, isn't it?
I'm going to correct you. I don't think Elton College is in Surrey, but there
yeah,
we go.
Yeah, it's where Eric Liddell went.
It's in South London, yeah.
Well, yeah,
so, it might be more Kent than Surrey. But anyway, well, I've been from that neck of the woods. Anyway, that's not an important point. Until I'm a teacher. Yeah, so are you wanting people for all of these events?
Yeah,
still?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. So, so the same format, 8 to 10 runners, six support crew. And just going back on what Neil was saying earlier, if you're not a runner,
doesn't matter.
Being part of a support crew, because you are part of the team. It is one big team. The support team, I mean, you can't do both. I tried to do both the first time around, it just about kills you.
Yeah.
So the support team is really, really key.
Without 100%.
It's fun as well being a support member, because you can see everyone else. Especially, I love it, this thing, Ben. I say to someone, at 2 o'clock in the morning when it's pouring rain, it's windy and it's dark, I'm going to ask you to go out and run, and I'm going to be in the car where it's nice and warm. Enjoy it, you know, and that's all part of the fun of it. So being part of the support crew is really just as much fun, I think, as running.
And if you are running, you don't have to be a star runner, do you? Would you say there's a minimum level of fitness needed?
You're good at running. I mean, if you can do a park run comfortably, if you can run 2.5 miles in half an hour.
Yeah, I think you just need to be able to run for half an hour, but on repeat, you know.
Yeah.
But you get like an hour off, you know, like it was basically. Yeah, run for half an hour, get an hour off, and then you did that maybe 2 or 3 times in a shift.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you're in a very fit and top runner anyway.
Yeah.
I'm thinking the less experienced runners, did they do any special training for the event, do you think? Or
so everyone that's done it so far have got a little bit of a background of running.
Yeah.
Some have been quick, some not. I'm going to say slow, they might be running.
It's all relative, isn't
it? Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So they might be able to run 5 or 6 miles in an hour at the most. And that's fine.
Yeah.
As Ian said, all you've got to be able to do is to run for half an hour.
I mean, it is all relative, you know.
Yeah. And no one's going to think any less of you at all. The opposite, maybe.
No, I mean, I said it about where I'm at in my current journey of running. The bottom line was it gave you half an hour extra.
Yeah.
It didn't really matter how far it went.
It was actually, you know, I couldn't have cared less about how far anyone went. It was just at that time when Neil said, I'm going to go out. It was just like, you know, that's great, because that's going to give us just a little bit more of a break. Maybe we can get a bit more drinking, a bit more, you know, food. I think, you know, like anything like that was a huge plus, especially when it was in the evening when you were getting tired or you're coming towards the end of your, you know, you know, stint and stuff. It you know, it was obviously tough, but little things like that made a difference.
We certainly learned on this 2022 tour that there is clearly going to be variability in the schedule depending on those speeds, but that's all accounted for either way. Obviously, if you do end up being Nottingham earlier, for example, we haven't finished the tour, we've still got 24 hours to go after the park run, but it just gave a little buffer with a little bit extra rest, so that you're only going to gain from that. And if you don't, the idea is that the tour fits into that time anyway and is allocated, and you get some time off in Nottingham anyway. So we have learned that there is going to be some shifting movement within the schedule.
Yeah,
And that's always going to depend. But
brilliant.
I would encourage everyone who, as Michael said, could do a half hour part. You know, they can run for half an hour, or they can do a part.
They mustn't think they're not
up to the
job. That's brilliant.
Come and get involved.
Right, we're going to wind up in a minute. If we'll put things in the show notes as well, but if you want to tell people if they are interested, what's their best way of getting in touch and doing it?
So we've got a website called masslng.co.uk.
Can you spell that for an LNG? Spell LNG.
MAS L and ANDG.
Okay.
.co.uk. Go on there. You've got all details of the events on there.
Brilliant.
Or you can go direct to Operation Orphan.
Yeah.
And you can find it on there.
So, and the videos, where do we go for those?
YouTube. Just type in Hope Alive Tour and you'll get two films. One's 1.5. If you want to spend half an hour, there's a whole half an hour film of this Hope Alive Tour in 2017.
Just to say on that video, the half an hour documentary film, if you're a runner and you like watching YouTube documentary films about running, it will do that for you. But it will probably capture what we've talked about from this tour, that version, because it's in the film. and it'll show you what happens and that camaraderie as well.
Brilliant. Right, last question. Well, it'll be a two-part question. Firstly, if there's anything we've forgotten that you wanted to really say that I haven't asked you about. And secondly, a really hard one. Can you sum up the tour in one sentence? Okay, any volunteers to go first?
Yeah, the tour is Michael. Totally relational. It is totally relational. It's about people and engaging with people. If you like people, you'll love the tour. And if you like running, you'll love the tour.
Brilliant.
It's just relational completely.
Lovely. The other two are thinking hard.
So I would echo that it's all about people, and it's all about where you end up because of running.
Mm.
But you're there because of running. But what you find out and learn has nothing to do with running.
Yeah, or it stems from it, but it goes well beyond it.
Yeah,
and actually, all of it is, Ben, it's about actually bringing hope to other people. You know, we're that's doing something we love doing, yeah? Brilliant. We meet new people, that's great fun. But actually, what we're doing is enabling hope for others. And if you take hope out of life, it's pretty hopeless, isn't it? So it does make, it makes a difference. That's why I do it. That was my personal driver.
Yeah.
When I came back from Sierra Leone.
Yeah.
To try and help those kids out there.
Yeah. Well, I hope this is coming across, but I mean, I can see in your voice and your eyes, you can see that you're passionate about it. And hopefully that's coming across all of you, in fact. Yeah.
So it's about helping other people. It's not about Michael Scott. It's not about Neil Marshall.
No. I think for me, I don't think I can sum it up in sort of one, but it was just something that it was very important for me to do. I think on multiple levels, whether it was, you know, for the charity, personal, you know, I think it was something that I needed as well at that point. You know, I think in sort of where I was in terms of, you know, what had gone on in the past and stuff, and being able to do something like that, whereas, you know, in the past couple of years, you know, things have been very limited. And for me, it was just on multiple levels, it was an unforgettable trip. You know, I mean, it was for me very special, actually. You know, I think I was very apprehensive about doing it in the beginning, but it was, you know, all the people, it was just the journey from the beginning, from the kind of start to the finish. Yeah. You know, learning about in the beginning about the slave, you know, part, you know, like the slave trade part of it, then going to the headquarters of like Operation Orphan. There was a lot to it, you know. As I say, it wasn't really about the kind of running, that was just part of it, you know. That's what you had to do. Sure. It was enjoyable, and you know, I mean, it was certainly like unforgettable for me. It was up there with, you know, I just, like Neil said, you get back and the week after you're on a bit of a downer. Like, it was so much fun. You miss day on day. You didn't know what was going to happen. Things were just coming out, and it just got better and better and better and better. And that just kept, you know, kept everyone going. So
yeah, I'm sure the other people who did it who aren't here would echo that, and probably add 100 other anecdotes and reasons for doing it, wouldn't they? And that's another really great thing.
I had an email from one of them, and she said, "Don't make it too big. Don't grow it too large. Keep it as an intimate sort of team." Building team exercise, you know, because you get to know people.
Yeah,
you can relate to people.
I suppose the way to do it is to have more events.
It's not a mass event, if you like.
Yeah.
No, it isn't.
You know, and the intimacy makes it special.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, that's a really good point to end on there. So thank you all very much. Listen to what Michael said a little while ago about how to find out more, and look in the show notes and. Well, it's been a different sort of podcast for me to the ones I've done in the past, and it's actually been more, I think, of wider appeal, I hope, than my usual niche things that I put out. So, you know, it's a fantastic cause. We've stressed the importance of it, and hopefully this will play a tiny part in building it that little bit more and bringing some hope to some more people.
Brilliant.
Thank you ever so much, guys. It's got to be this, it's Jubilee weekend. I hope you really enjoyed that podcast. And if you're interested, then follow the links in the show notes and get in touch with Michael and be a part of the next Hope Alive tour. In the meantime, as I always say, keep
keep enduring and tune in for the next episode, which should be coming soon.